Now, talking about the brain, we're joined in the studio by Dr. Howard Ring, who's from the University of Cambridge. Hi, Howard.
Hello.
And most people are familiar with epilepsy. Perhaps, you know, we may have friends or relatives ourselves who have seizures and things like that. But actually, it's a bit more complicated as a disease, and that's what Howard's going to talk about. But tell us first, what is epilepsy? What causes it? And what sort of things happen?
OK, epilepsy is a disorder of the brain, and it's caused when groups of nerve cells essentially fire too fast. And the way in which the seizure shows itself is determined by how many nerve cells start firing abnormally. So if only a relatively small number of nerve cells fire abnormally, then the seizure may be rather limited, for instance, twitching of a hand or movements of a mouth or a face. However, when the whole cortex, the whole outer surface of the brain gets involved in this seizure activity, then you have what a lot of people would recognise to be a seizure, what we call a generalised tonic-clonic seizure, where somebody loses consciousness, collapses to the ground, they'll go rigid and they shake, and the whole thing lasting anything from a few minutes to longer, occasionally needing emergency treatment.
And what sort of things can actually bring on epilepsy? Are some people born with it, or is it caused by something?
Yes, to all of the above and others. Certainly, it can be caused associated with various genetic syndromes that people are born with. It can be caused by brain damage. There's a part of the brain called the temporal lobe, which is particularly vulnerable to not having enough oxygen during the birth process. And so people whose birth is unduly complicated can sometimes have seizures. A kind of epilepsy that many of your listeners may be familiar with occurs in infants and young children below the age of about five, where they have a very high temperature. These are known as febrile convulsions. And these are convulsions. They're not epilepsy. And in general, people who have febrile convulsions don't go on to have epilepsy. And that's another important point, that you can have seizures without having epilepsy. And you can have epilepsy without having very obvious seizures. So it's an increasingly complicated subject.
And how do we normally treat epilepsy?
The great majority of people can be very well treated with anti-epileptic drugs. Approximately 70% of people who develop full-blown epilepsy, which is repeated seizures, having one seizure really isn't epilepsy, but having a tendency to repeated seizures is epilepsy. And about 70% of people with epilepsy will respond well to the first or second anti-epileptic drug that they will be given.
How do these drugs actually work? It sounds incredibly complicated to give someone a drug that actually affects their brain in this way.
It is incredibly complicated. In fact, it's sufficiently complicated that I can't give you a very good answer. I'm not sure that many people can. But basically, there are different things that can excite or calm down or inhibit brain nerve cells. And in general, things that calm down or inhibit nerve cells, particularly by increasing in certain parts of the brain a transmitter between nerve cells called GABA, will help to reduce the number of seizures. There's another neurotransmitter called glutamate, which excites nerve cells, and too much glutamate activity causes fits. And so other groups of medicines that are effective are those that reduce the activity of glutamate. So basically, increase GABA or decrease glutamate, and that will have an effect.
So we see people maybe having fits, and they're quite dramatic. But what are the other things that epilepsy can sort of bring on, the other problems? Because obviously for people's families, it can be quite distressing.
Absolutely. Well, that's a very good question. And what we always say is that epilepsy is more than just fits or seizures. Seizures are a symptom of epilepsy. One of the important ones, and I am very eager to mention this, is that there is a social aspect to the condition. In the past, people were frightened of other people who had epilepsy. People were afraid that seizures meant you were possessed or that there was something awful happening. And I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to say that's not the case at all. Seizures are simply a symptom of a localised disease in the brain that can be adequately treated. And so really what happens is that we need to educate people that seizures are nothing awful, and to try to help people fight the stigma that is sometimes applied to those with epilepsy. So that's one kind of treatment, education for social stigma. Another thing that I'm particularly interested in is the relationship between epilepsy and psychiatric symptoms. And although the two might seem to be rather different, first of all, they both involve the same organ, that is the brain. And sometimes what happens is that if you have a discharge in one part of the brain, that can actually generate a range of psychiatric symptoms. These might be to do with depression. You might sometimes rarely, but sometimes quite dramatically, get symptoms of what we call psychosis, so seeing things that aren't there, hearing voices.
Haven't people felt profoundly religious experiences as a consequence of epilepsy?
Well, this is where it gets extremely interesting. The brain, as you know, does all sorts of amazing things. Pretty much it does everything we are and everything we do. And epilepsy is a manifestation of increased activity in those brain cells, and therefore all the things that we can do, essentially, can be generated by seizures. But because it's an abnormal way of activating these nerve cells, we get things broken up. We don't get the whole pattern of behaviour. So people have had intense religious experiences. There are accounts of a feeling of conviction, of an absolutely free-floating certainty. This is right, which just exists by itself, which is rather unusual, although in fact it does relate to
I suppose
to
if we can home in, Howard, on which bits of the brain are triggering those funny experiences, they paradoxically give us some clues as to what those bits of the brain do and therefore a better understanding of how the brain works.
That's absolutely right, and in principle it should be very straightforward. You map where the epileptic focus, that is the site at which the seizure originates, is with the behaviour, and you know exactly what's going on. It's not as simple as that for several reasons. First of all, because it turns out that there are several different parts of the brain that can generate individual emotional psychiatric symptoms. And secondly, it's very hard sometimes, particularly if you don't have depth electrodes, wires in the brain recording exactly where the seizure is starting, to be sure exactly where the seizure is starting. Because, of course, a nerve cell is a microscopic thing, and we're looking at chunks of brain, you know, millimetres or bigger.
Thank you very much. This is Howard Ring, who is from the University of Cambridge, and he works on epilepsy.